Many beautiful spots about my spirit home have lured me to put them upon canvas, but the scenes of earth appeal to one the most. It is my desire to be able to so inspire an artist upon the earth plane that he can produce pictures of things which now seem commonplace to you, but which, under the magic of his touch, will be a sermon in themselves. 490. Would that I could depict upon an earth canvas the dark depths of the collieries where men are risking their lives for a few cents with which to force from their doors the gaunt figures of famine and cold. To them, death should no longer wear a black shroud, but should be clad in all the purity of an angel's dress, and with a kiss as soft as their babes kiss their tired eyes shut in sweet slumber. 491. Another picture, to hang on the walls of wealth, is the pallid faces of little children, with a background of factories, faces grown old and full of the grimness of winter long before the spring of life kissed into being the first sweet flowers. Let this picture tell, better than any stale volume of statistics, with what a price the rich fabrics around them were purchased. Yet, even if I had the power to paint upon the skies of earth the scenes I so long to paint, some enterprising cloud trust would forever blot them out. 492. Humanity is weak, and how weak none but those who have labored as I have among them can know. People in large cities have many things that those in country places do not enjoy, but how many, do you think, enjoy the beautiful buildings and parks? It is human nature to sigh for the unattainable, and if it were not for this, they would not be striving to better their conditions. 493. Those who live close to nature, who know her paths and bypaths, and to whom she whispers of many things, may lack the polish that book learning brings to one, but they do not lack the culture of spirit that raises them above crude conditions of earth. All who live close to the heart of nature may not be able to interpret her many messages, but these people are better, far, than if they lived in the busy marts of the commercial world. They are saved from many sins and sorrows. I do not agree with one of old, that ignorance is vice, for I know only too well that, each year, there are countless numbers who commit acts that they know to be wrong, and I also know that there are many others who would do similar things if placed in the same environments. 494. It is the common things of life which require your careful attention. It is with feelings of the most profound sorrow that I look upon the conditions on earth. I can see where, in many places, the surging masses are like a tinderbox, waiting for the spark that will fire them to terrible deeds. Can we withhold the hand that will strike the flint of human sufferings until it will give forth the looked-for spark? Is the question that agitates my soul tonight. There are many different grades of spirits who are working among humanity. Some have not progressed far enough to have any desire for good, others toil without ceasing to bring joy to those in distress. The world is advancing in many ways, but the hands of the oppressors are growing heavier, day by day, until it seems as if the very heart's blood will be crushed out of thousands, before the eyes of monopolies will raise their gaze from the fast-growing hordes of wealth to tortured humanity. Unless the people of earth awake, speedily, to the piteous cries of struggling humanity, precious blood will be shed that will take centuries to remove the stains. Each one must raise a voice in protest. Let no man sit idle while the needs of the hour are so great. A word spoken at the right moment may be the awakening touch your neighbor has been waiting for. Go forth, not to seek whom you may devour, but whom you may help to save. Paint a word picture that will cause all who read to gaze unflinchingly upon a condition that must be remedied without delay. Yes, heaven is nearer than you think, and so is perdition, or a condition more like it than anything else I know of. 495. I write these are things because I so long to see many wrongs righted. I have worked for many years, and I trust my labors may bear abundant fruits. If I have succeeded in making one feel the needs of suffering humanity, I shall feel that I have not labored in vain. May the white dove of peace hover so near the earth plane that you may be able to find shelter beneath her wings, is the wish of your artist friend, signed, Frederick. 496. The last page of the above typewriting contains 237 words, and was written in 1 minute by the spirit typewriter. If the reader can realize that 120 words on the best machine is the maximum speed of operating a typewriter by mortals, he will be able to realize what a wonderful test it would be to witness one purporting to be a spirit actually doubling the speed of the fastest typewriting of mortals. Oh! Delusion, you say? But who are the witnesses here? This record shows that this phenomenon was witnessed by persons of widely separated homes, at one séance, a party from Los Angeles, California, two from Albuquerque, N.M., one from Nebraska, one from I.T., one from K.C., Mo., and six of Spring Hill, Kansas. At the next séance, five or six persons from other places, in different states, and so on, until certainly vouched for by the most diversified and competent ability to testify to any fact, or set of facts, necessary to a proper finding in any case before a court of earthly jurisprudence. Seance number 30, October 9, 1902, 497. Visitors present: Mrs. W. A. Miller, of Springdale, Arkansas; Mrs. J. L. Dixon, of Marshalltown, Iowa; Mr. W. J. Pfeiffer, of California, Missouri; Mr. and Mrs. Henry Gruff, of Wymore, Nebraska. After the preliminary exercises, the spirit Professor Denton stood to view of the circle in materialized form and said, "Friends and strangers, we are glad you are here this evening, and we would be glad to have these visitors remain longer with us to help us in our undertaking, but since it seems your duty to return to your homes, we part with you, thanking you for your visit with us, for your kindly regard toward us, and the benefit you have been to us while here, and we hope to have you call again, and in the meantime, may peace be with you." 498. "Now, friends, is there anything you would have me discuss this evening?" No one seeming to have a subject ready, the spirit continued, "We have requested, several times, that the circle discuss scientific themes, prior to opening seance, but it seems, so far, you have failed to comply, and again, we ask you to do so to put us in touch with such thought. And let me say just a word of warning to you now." 499. "In looking over the countries of your world, it appears to me that your country, at least, is in a very bad condition, and I am fearful that precious blood will be shed before things are righted. We, on our side, are doing all within our power to avert what now looks a terrible fratricidal war, and should it come, as now seems probable, it will be your duty to go out bravely to the rescue of humanity. There will be no middle ground, no place of retreat. That terrible conflict will be father against son, son against father, brother against brother, neighbor against neighbor. We hope that our intervention may prevent the occurrence of such a deplorable condition, but we fear we cannot." 500. "On this occasion, for the benefit of the visitors, some of the strongest possible tests were given of the fact of materialization, aside from vocalization and spirit writing, to realize which, the reader should constantly bear in mind that our seance room is on the second floor of the house, and directly over the reception room. Remember, too, that the visitors have the privilege of the whole house and all the entire premises, all day long, and all the time. That the house is isolated from all other buildings, the nearest building being about 100 feet distant; that there is no white clothing worn by the medium, nor any white cloth or clothing in or about the cabinet; that many of the visitors come to these seances from their homes hundreds of miles away at an individual expense of from $20 to $100 and more, and they remain here from 3 or 4 days for some and up to 30 days for others. And then, again, some of these visitors are lawyers of ability, practicing at the bar in different states; others are physicians, regular graduates of various schools of medicine; others, again, are school teachers, but no Zacchaeus comes here, because he cannot get into the seance room without some critic's eye exposing him. Remember, too, that trapdoors through the floor, opening into the sitting room, could not possibly be without instant detection by the ever-inquiring eyes of the visitors here, and this prepares us to introduce some of the phenomena of this séance, the most striking of which was that, the personality claiming, and whom the circle recognized to be, the spirit Thomas Paine, stood forth, before the circle, in condition of visibility, being clothed upon in the appearance of the costumes of fashion for men during the colonial and revolutionary days of early American history, knee buckles, full ruffled white shirt front, stood a moment, then began dematerializing at the feet, the body sinking down as the dematerialization went on, giving the spirit the appearance of passing down through the floor to just above the knees, then the body fell over flat on the floor and vanished out of sight, then rose up from the floor, looking as though coming through the floor to his full height, 5 feet 10 inches, then descended again as though passing down through the floor to the chin, and the head vanished, and almost instantly there stood in the parting of the cabinet curtains the appearance of a lady dressed in white garments, having bright jeweled headdress and diamond-bedecked girdle about the waist, stood a moment, advanced out into the room 2 or 3 steps, and backed into the cabinet behind the cabinet curtains. And another lady form, also in white, but wearing a large bright jewel, in crescent shape, upon her forehead, and said, "I belong to a band of Indian spirits now in higher spheres, and our band is called the Band of the Crescent. We rarely visit the earth, and our calling is to receive those prepared to enter with us and teach them of conditions, and give to them such knowledge as we see that they are in need of." And this form faded away, and still another differently dressed, but in white, spread her skirts out to the extent her arms would reach, and vanished, and finally, a lady form so attired as the others came out in front of the cabinet, and slowly descended as though passing down through the floor until the head passed seemingly down out of sight of the circle, to the utter astonishment of those visitors who had never before witnessed this manner of dematerialization. Dr. Arletto. Then one having the appearance of a man said, 501. How do you do, friends? When you learn to live right you will not be sick. You have a great deal to learn yet about how to live. Although there has been great improvement in eating, along some lines, it would seem that, in general, the reverse is the real fact. See people gormandizing till they get the gout. Filling up with drink, with indigestible stuff of all kinds, crowding and overworking their stomachs at all times. They load them down with almost everything that comes in the way. Of course, they break down and wind up with appendicitis, that requires a surgical operation, and the surgeon gets your money and the undertaker gets your body. Why did not people have appendicitis when you and I were children? Because there was no such disease then, and some of it now, is something else for want of name, and the doctor has converted gastritis, peritonitis, and it would seem, nearly all the itises into an awful fatal maladicitis, and named it all appendicitis, and what the awful name don't kill, the knife does, or the patient is lucky. 502. But animals don't have appendicitis, because they have more sense than to eat what will inflame the stomach, unless man gives them some sugar-coated poison. Animals have more sense, are more intelligent than you give them credit for, and if you would pat and more after animals, in eating, you would not have such enormous appendicitis doctor bills to pay. Mortals should eat better, should eat little or no meat. I find that people who eat no meat are long-lived. There are people living on high altitudes, eating very little meat, who live long. Eat right, and you will live longer and suffer less. And Bessie announced the name of this spirit to be Arletto, who was a writer. 503. And one appeared at the writing desk, took a tablet and wrote 1 page, took it over to the secretary, and asked him whether or not he could read it, and the secretary answering in the affirmative, the spirit said all right, left the writing with the secretary, took the tablet from the secretary, went back to the desk and began writing. But Dr. Reed told him to take his stand out on the floor between the circle and the cabinet so the circle could see, clearly, the whole process of the writing, and thus stationed, the spirit wrote and delivered to the secretary 9 more pages, and the secretary handed them to Mrs. Miller, who held them to close of seance, but the spirit wrote 2 more pages and handed the tablet to Mr. Griff, and had Mr. Griff tear those 2 leaves from the tablet and hand the tablet back to the spirit, and Mr. Griff held the 2 leaves of writing to close of seance, and the writing held by Mr. Griff was found to be a continuation of the writing held by Mrs. Miller. And all this passing of the tablet to the secretary and Mr. Griff revealed to the secretary and circle that after the secretary tore from tablet the one leaf of writing, there was then no writing in the tablet, and that the tablet handed to Mr. Griff was the same tablet from which all the sheets had been torn, and the rate of the writing was only about 200 words per minute, and the following are the words of the writing, to wit, 504. Friends, not one part of nature alone, but all her productions and varieties, become the object of speculative man's inquiry. He takes different views of nature from the inattentive spectator, and scarcely an appearance, however common it may be, but affords matter for his contemplation. He inquires how and why are things as they are, because nature's law has the controlling interest in all things that pertain to life. These have been the inquiries that have employed many of the philosophers of the past and present ages. 505. Too much speculation is certainly wrong, but there is a defect of an opposite nature that does much more prejudice, namely, that of silencing all inquiry, by alleging the benefits you received from a thing instead of investigating the cause of its production. 506. If you were to inquire how a volcano or earthquake came to be formed, such a reasoner, enumerating its benefits, answers, because God knew it would be useful. Such writers, and there are many such, add very little to the advancement of knowledge. In fact, those men who want to combat every appearance and every irregularity in nature into your service, and expatiate and combat that very morality which they would seem to desire to promote. 507. While there are some philosophers who see nothing but beauty, symmetry and order, there are others who look upon the gloomy side of nature, enlarge on its defects, and seem to consider the earth on which they live as one seeming extensive delusion. 508. When the soul is addressed, all the features of the visage seem settled in a state of profound tranquility. Their union and their harmony seem to mark the sweet serenity of the mind, and give a true information of what passes within. But when the soul is excited, the human visage becomes a living picture. 509. It is particularly in the eyes that the passions are painted, and in which you may most readily discover their beginning. The eye belongs to the soul more than any other organ. It participates, in all of its emotions, as well of the most soft and tender, as of the most tumultuous and forceful. It not only receives but transmits them by sympathy. The observing eye of one catches the secret fire from another, and the person thus often becomes immoral. Persons who are short-sighted labor under a particular disadvantage in this respect. They are, in a manner, entirely cut off from the language of the eyes, and this gives an air of stupidity to the face which often produces very unfavorable prepossessions. However intelligent you find such persons to be, you can scarcely be brought back from your prejudice, and often continue in the first erroneous opinion. In this manner you are too much inclined to judge of men and women by their physiognomy. Perhaps, at first, caught up your judgments prematurely, they mechanically influence you all your lives. This extends to the very color or cut of people's clothes. You should, for this reason, be careful, even in such trifling particulars, since they go to make up a part of the total judgment which those you converse with may form to your advantage. 510. Painters, whose study leads them to contemplation of external forms, are much more adequate judges of these than any naturalist can be. No one passion is regularly expressed on different countenances in the same manner. Grief often sits upon the face like joy, and pride assumes the air of passion. It would be vain, therefore, to express their general effect, since they are often as various as the countenances they sit upon, and here lies all the skill of the physiognomist. In being able to distinguish what part of the face is marked by nature, and what by the mind, what part has been originally formed, and what is made by habit, constitutes the science upon which the ancients so much valued themselves, which we, at present, so little regard. 511. Some, however, of the most acute men among you have paid great attention to this art, and by long practice, they have been able to give some character of every person whose face they examined. However, most of these observations which tend to a discovery of the mind by the face are merely capricious. Nature has kindly hid your hearts from each other, to keep you in good humor with your fellow creatures. 512. Another point of view which men have, is to increase the size of their figure, and to take up more room in the world than nature seems to have allotted them. They desire to swell out their clothes by stiffness of art, and raise their heels, while they add to the largeness of their heads. 513. Take men altogether, there are many more deformed and plain, than beautiful and shapely. The former, as being the most numerous, give law to fashion, and thus laws are generally such as are made in their own favor. 514. The women begin to color their cheeks with red when the natural roses are faded. In all parts of the world, this custom prevails more or less, and powdering and frizzing the hair, though not as general, seems to have arisen from a similar control. The women upon your earth are the greatest slaves, sensible of their weakness, and unable to resist, they are obliged to suffer the hardships which are naturally inflicted by such as have been taught that nothing but corporeal force ought to give preeminence. Such is the case in your civilization of today. It is not, therefore, till after some degree of refinement, that women are treated with lenity, and not till the highest degree of politeness, that they are permitted to share in all the privileges of men. Therefore, women must unite their forces and thus obtain that superiority over the mind which they are unable to extort by their strength. A. Nature has brought man into life with a greater variety of wants and infirmities than the rest of her creatures, unarmed in the midst of enemies. 515. Death is the certain goal to which all are hastening. However, nature approaches to this period by slow and imperceptible degrees. Your life is consumed day after day, and some one of your faculties, or vital principles, is every hour dying before the rest. So death is only the last shade in the picture, and man suffers a greater change in going from youth to old age than from old age into the grave. Why should you fear death, if your lives have been such as not to make spirit life dreadful? Why should you fear that moment which is prepared by a thousand other moments of the same kind? Death is as calmly endured as the disorder that brings it on. Nature, for the happiness of man, has rendered his sentiment stronger than his reason. His interest is so great, that he only attends to his own representation. The judgment of others is to him considered as a hasty conclusion. Death, therefore, is not that terrible thing you suppose it to be. It is a spectre which frights you at a distance, but which disappears when you come to approach it more closely. Your ideas of its terrors are conceived in prejudice, and dressed up by fancy. You regard it not only as the greatest misfortune, but as an evil accompanied with the most excruciating tortures. You have even increased your apprehensions, by reasoning on the extent of your sufferings. It must be dreadful, say some, since it is sufficient to separate the soul from the body. It must be long, since your sufferings are proportioned to succession of your ideas, and these being painful, must succeed each other with extreme rapidity. In this manner has false philosophy labored to augment the miseries of your nature, and to aggravate that period which nature has kindly covered with insensibility. Signed, Arlotto Seance No. 31 October 12, 1902 516. No stranger present, but Mrs. Miller and Mrs. Dixon, as visitors, still remain. The regular order of business being completed, the seance opened by presenting one lady form at southeast corner of cabinet and one gentleman form at the same time, in the parting of the curtains in center of cabinet front. 517. Then Professor Denton stood, in materialized form, to view of the circle, and greeted the circle in these spoken words, to wit, "Friends, are you all well? There are many upon your earth who do not appreciate the beauties and beautiful conditions of your world. They do not drink in the grandeur of the forests and extended plains. Some think of their great troubles about this matter and that matter. With them, all is trouble. They think that they are in such terrible condition, a very unfortunate one. They do not know that but for trials and tribulations all would be an unbearable monotony, and nothing would call out your energies that produce your soul growth. Your troubles are necessary to your preparation for enjoyment of the lovely scenes about you, they are not detrimental, but prepare you to look upon and enjoy nature's beauties. Then look forward to the life of the little one, see its lights and shades, all have their trials. We realize that there is no person but what has and has had trials, otherwise you would have nothing to fight for. Your trials may leave you over here, nevertheless we have our trials, but they are not like yours. I encounter those from Earth who have brought trials with them. I hope that Earth people will so develop as not to have so many trials as we have seen of some who came here. The circle had been discussing the God idea before seance, and now comes Thomas Paine speaking in his very eloquent manner, saying, 518. Please tell me what God is? God is nature. You, as mortals, are gods, as much as any mentioned in the Bible. We are not infallible. We are subject to earth influences that pertain to those coming here from the earth side, with their crude conditions. If all would undertake to develop the highest and best conditions for human life, your strikes would cease by and by, and strife be reduced to a minimum. Over here we are not gods, that is, we are not infallible. Whatever we know we have learned, and from what we have learned we are able to foresee much that comes to pass. You should remember that, as long as you live and develop, you will have reverses. From these reverses we learn to foretell many coming events, though our predictions are based upon conditions as we see them. But when the conditions change we miss our calculations. 519. The anonymous writing of last seance was continued and completed at this seance and signed, Arlito. 504. Arabella antenatal environments object of decoration of costume in spirit materialization. 520. Several lady forms, each attired in white garments, though of different patterns, styles, and adornments, appeared, one at a time, but in uncommon brilliancy, and thus spoke the last of the array. 521. Friends of Earth, I am glad of this opportunity to convey words of love and friendship from those of my condition to whomsoever of your Earth may be willing to give an attentive ear, and we hope many, ere long, will see this work to be true, and realize this truth for which all other truths exist, and know it so, while they yet live upon earth, and embrace it to their living delight, for it being eternal truth, sooner or later all must embrace it, and then, in their retrospections, deplore that they had not earlier learned concerning it. 522. We hope to so modify the processes of unfoldment that conditions of your world of human gestation will bring forth into the morning of individual life more spirituality and less tendency to what you may call criminality, so that, at least the children, when sent out here, may reach us without so much blemish. But we are able to look upon the child as purely innocent because it is unconscious of the blemishes, and they are not of its own voluntary choosing. It is true that even the babe does more thinking than people are aware of, yet its thinking has shape given according to natural environments produced by the conditions of its gestation, over which the will of the child could have no control. If the parentage of your world could ever be learned, and practiced accordingly, of the inevitable consequences of the conditions environing gestation, then the time might speedily follow when nation or people might not lift up sword against nation or people, and when they should learn war no more. But how long? Oh, how long? Oh, if we could induce people to think, if we could make people know of these things, these laws, unfolding people out of given conditions, it would be to us an equivalent labor value of many hundreds of years of your time. 523. I have been several hundred years in spirit life, and most of those years, as fast as I would myself learn, I have endeavored to teach to others the way of that which I had learned, and from the many myriads of men, women and children who have followed me to the spirit world I have learned much of the need of an understanding among people of earth, concerning the proper primitive conditions that should be accorded to the unfoldment of the individual personality. 524. Someone may wish to know if I spoke this language when upon earth in the physical form, and I answer, not at all. But, in order that I might use the opportunities of this dispensation in disseminating some light from higher realms as a guiding light to those of your language following after, I have been at the pains to learn your language. Your means of communicating thought are so very inferior to ours that there is no comparison I could make that would convey to you an idea of the real contrast. Yet, to reach you, we must employ methods by which you can discern some of our thought, and the great gulf between the best earthly conditions of human existence and the conditions of life, even in the spheres to which I have attained, is so vast that denizens of Earth cannot possibly comprehend our status except to a very limited degree, even if so situated that their own eyes could behold it.